Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu eurem Lieblings-KI-Podcast, dem AI-Melange aus Wien. Heute atmen wir einmal tief durch und spüren unseren Atem, wie er sich durch unseren ganzen Bauchraum ausfüllt und diesen wieder verlässt. Wir besinnen uns auf das Hier und Jetzt. Es geht heute um das Thema Self-Leadership, Resilienz und Awareness. Themen, die sehr viel mit unserer digital beschleunigten Zeit zu tun haben und die mit Hilfe der AI vielleicht gestärkt werden können oder doch noch mehr ins Rütteln geraten. So genau wissen wir es noch nicht. Wir werden es heute versuchen herauszufinden. Denn im Gespräch mit meiner heutigen Gästin geht es genau um diese Themen. Meine Gästin ist seit über 20 Jahren internationale Coachin für Leadership-Themen und sie arbeitet mit Executives und Teams aus diversen Industrien, Profit, Non-Profit, internationale Organisationen. Sie ist eine Weltreisende, eine Non-Dualistin und ich glaube von den Menschen, die ich persönlich kenne, eine, die die meisten Sprachen wirklich fließend sprechen kann. Vielleicht hat das ein wenig damit zu tun, dass sie aus einem Teil Europas kommt, das ich immer wieder neu definieren und neu hinterfragen musste. Weiß ich nicht. Sie ist jedenfalls geborene Baskin und lebt seit über 20 Jahren in Österreich. Hallo und herzlich willkommen, liebe Amaia Sottes Linares Rivas. Ich habe den ganzen Namen jetzt ausgesprochen. Herzlich willkommen, schön, dass du da bist.
Danke vielmals, liebe Anna. Es ist wirklich, ich freue mich total, hier zu sein und mit dir ein bisschen zu plaudern.
Sag, weil ich das erwähnt habe, wie viele Sprachen sind das genau? Sechs, sieben?
Sechs Sprachen, ja. Weil ich denke, das kommt von Liebe zu Menschen und Kulturen. Und ja, es ist für mich, es macht mir wirklich Spaß, neue Sachen zu lernen und auch Sprachen.
Ja, ich glaube, Japanisch war das Letzte, oder? Was du versucht hast, weiß gar nicht, wie weit du gekommen bist.
Ja, das habe ich angesagt. Das war der siebte eigentlich, aber das war nur, weil ich nach Japan wollte und ich mag ein bisschen reden zu können. So, ich habe irgendwie Basic Japanisch gelernt.
Wir führen unser Gespräch später nicht auf Japanisch, so viel ist klar. Ich lasse es dich aber aussuchen, in welche Sprache wir heute sprechen. Also lasst ihr euch auch ein bisschen überraschen, was wir da finden, wo Amaia und ich sich für uns vielleicht einigen können. Bevor wir aber ins Gespräch kommen, kurz wie immer zu unseren News der Woche. Diesmal, und ich verspreche, drei wichtige Dinge, die man wissen sollte, was sich in der Welt der KI tut. Wir starten mit einem, schon wieder leider, ein bisschen ernsthaften Thema. Es ist nämlich KI-Weltuntergangsstimmung auf allen Seiten. Einerseits wird der Untergang des Internets, so wie wir es kennen, seit Wochen diskutiert, denn angeblich sind schon 50% des Traffics im Internet auf Bots zurückzuführen. Und wie man vielleicht schon bemerkt hat, die E-Commerce-Shops werden durch die Chatbot-Suche ordentlich durcheinander gewirbelt, weil eben Traffic kommt von woanders. Das ist einmal die eine Seite. Auf der anderen Seite melden sich wieder wirklich laute Sicherheitsexpertinnen-Stimmen zu Wort, die nach einem weltweiten Verbot der KI-Systeme rufen. Nicht mehr oder nicht weniger. Konkret meine ich hier den Eliza Yudkowsky, ist ein US-amerikanischer KI-Sicherheitsexperte, der schon seit Anfang der 2000er Jahre tatsächlich sich mit diesen Risiken fortgeschrittener künstlicher Intelligenz befasst. Und er meint eben nicht mehr oder weniger, wenn irgendein Unternehmen oder eine Gruppe irgendwo auf dem Planeten eine künstliche Superintelligenz baut, dann werden alle überall auf der Erde sterben. So Yudkowsky, in seinem neuen, gerade publizierten Buch If Anyone Builds It, Everyone Dies. Also ein nicht so fröhliches Thema zu Beginn, aber trotzdem etwas, was man wirklich ernst nehmen muss. Denn gleichzeitig fordern über 200 führende Persönlichkeiten, also ehemalige Staatschefs, Nobelpreisträger, KI-Forscher, dass Staaten bis Ende 2026 verbindliche internationale Grenzen setzen für bestimmte KI-Praktiken, etwa das Imitieren von Menschen oder selbstreplizierende KI. Ziel ist mehr Sicherheit, Transparenz und Verbindlichkeit beim Einsatz von KI. Also der Druck wächst, nicht nur auf nationale Regierungen, also nicht nur nationale Regulierungen zu schaffen, sondern wirklich auch globale Standards zur Begrenzung von Risiken zu schaffen. So könnten eigentlich die Staaten, die bisher skeptisch waren, politisch unter Zugzwang kommen. Aber mal sehen, die globale Weltlage ist ja nicht so einfach. Man kann fast eigentlich nichts mehr vorhersagen. Zurück zum Thema Chatbot-Traffic. Und das ist natürlich ein Thema, mit dem sich jeder Produktmanager wirklich beschäftigen muss. Wo kommt jetzt der Traffic her? Ein Auslöser für diese Diskussion könnten vielleicht auch die neuen Gemini-Features im Chrome-Browser sein. Vielleicht nicht der Auslöser, Auslöser sind die Daten, aber sag mal, es wird das die Diskussion jedenfalls befeuern. Denn nämlich Chrome-Browser, den viele von uns wahrscheinlich nutzen, ich jedenfalls neben ein paar anderen, aber er ist schon viel im Einsatz, der erhält nämlich neue KI-Funktionen. Gemini wird im Chrome-Browser für alle US-Nutzer, noch nicht Europa, eingeführt und bietet tab-übergreifendes Kontextverständnis. Also Nutzer könnten Gemini bitten, Inhalte zu erklären, Informationen eben tab-übergreifend zu vergleichen, vergangene Browser-Sitzungen abzurufen und. Und in Wahrheit sind im Hintergrund einfach Agentenfunktionen im Einsatz, mit denen Gemini im Namen des Nutzers agieren könnte. Zum Beispiel Befüllen des Einkaufswagens, Planung gewisser Termine oder eben so Dinge, die man im Alltag eher braucht. Also das sind eher so die Cases, die auch gezeigt wurden in den Videos. Aber was viel relevanter ist, wenn wir schon beim Traffic sind, in Summe wird dadurch auch der AI-Mode gepusht. Über den haben wir vor ein paar Wochen gesprochen. Das ist halt eine neuartige Suche, die eigentlich eher einem Chatbot ähnlich ist als der klassischen Google-Suche. Und eben in diesem AI-Mode, der gepusht wird, wird eben SEO-Links mehr und mehr in den Hintergrund verschwinden. Gleichzeitig, und das muss man auch sagen, dass der Gemini im Chrome-Browser jetzt mehr integriert ist, soll auch eine wirklich gute Seite haben, nämlich die Sicherheitschecks im Browser werden wesentlich erhöht. Der User wird noch besser gewarnt, wenn eine Seite zum Beispiel gefährlich sein könnte oder nicht eben secure ist oder wenn zum Beispiel auf einer Seite die Passwörter oder eines Users kompromittiert sein könnten. Also da kriegt man eine Warnung. Also alles in allem, wie gesagt, nur für US-Nutzer momentan, noch nicht in Europa, aber das wird eine ordentliche Disruption weiterhin befeuern. Wir sind gespannt. Was sich auch noch disruptiert oder zumindest wesentlich verändert, und das ist schon die dritte News der Woche, wer gerne Notion nutzt als Notebook, ich jedenfalls als für sämtliche Notizen und viele anderen Aufgaben. Also die Notion-Nutzer dürfen sich seit 18. September über die Notion Agents freuen. Also Notion hat die KI-Agenten eingeführt, die zeitgesteuert oder eventbasiert auch selbstständig arbeiten könnten. Das heißt, sie könnten zum Beispiel Seiten erstellen, Datenbanken erstellen, zum Beispiel Feedback analysieren, E-Mails verfassen. Also in Wahrheit sozusagen eine zentrale Steuerungsplattform für viele Tasks, die man so erledigen möchte. Denn nämlich der Agent kann Informationen aus Notion und den verbundenen Tools, wie zum Beispiel Slack, Google Drive und, verbinden. Und das ist übrigens über schon letzte Woche erwähnten MCP-Protokoll möglich. Und der ist nicht so ganz sicher, wie man bis jetzt gehört hat. Mal sehen, wie gut das auch für Notion funktionieren wird. Es gibt mittlerweile auch schon laute Stimmen, dass es nicht zu 100% safe ist. Aber anyways, diese Notion-Agents könnten dann mehrstufige Aufgaben planen und bis zu 20 Minuten autonom arbeiten. Notion hat übrigens angekündigt, wenn wir schon dabei sind, weil sie jetzt auf Agenten setzen, auch die europäische Präsenz ausbauen zu wollen und eröffnet demnächst ein Office in München und wird auch in Berlin demnächst eine Konferenz abhalten. Also wer sich für Notion generell als Tool oder als Unternehmen interessiert, die kommen auch näher an nach Europa. Ich habe Notion Agent übrigens noch nicht ausprobiert. Das ist für Pro-Kunden verfügbar, beziehungsweise man kann es ja nur so leicht testen. Ich bin noch nicht dazu gekommen und ein bisschen Gedanken machen wir dann schon, diese Sicherheitslücken, von denen man immer wieder liest. Also diese Verbindungen der Chatbots mit allen anderen Tools, wenn man nicht super technisch versiert ist, so wie ich, würde ich sagen, lieber eher Finger davon lassen, bevor man nicht genau weiß, was man da für Daten wohin schickt und freigibt. Ja, das waren jetzt einmal die drei News der Woche. Wie gesagt, bunt und nicht unbedingt nur fröhlich. Und ich bin jetzt sehr gespannt, wie wir im Gespräch mit Amaya, welche Töne wir dann einschlagen werden, ob wir es schaffen, uns und unsere Zuhörerinnen fröhlicher zu stimmen. Liebe Amaya, ich habe dich als Leadership-Expertin vorgestellt. Ah ja, zuerst eigentlich die Frage, welche Sprache sollen wir wählen?
Ich würde sagen, können wir das auf Englisch machen, sodass auch viele andere Hörer, die wahrscheinlich Deutsch nicht so gut sprechen, dass sie auch gut verstehen können.
Guter Punkt, because your audience is actually very international. So actually we are now spreading our wings with AI Melange to all over the world, from Asia to America and Africa. And yes, okay, we switched to English. I'm your host, you choose the language. That was the deal. So Amaya, I introduced you as a leadership expert and as somebody who has been in these fields for a very long time, and you've been working with individuals very closely, but also with teams and organizations. What are you observing at the moment? Where are we? How are people doing? How are leaders doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'm observing, on the one hand, especially after COVID, there started to be like a shift in organizations and how we work. And there was, you know, because of the need of the market itself, we started seeing teams becoming more diversified. Why? People could be working from home, companies could start hiring everywhere. And that I noticed there was a big shift in how heterogeneous teams are and how normal it has become to have a team where somebody's sitting in Hong Kong, somebody else is sitting in San Francisco. And in my reality, in the day-to-day work I do, most leaders I work with, they have teams eventually all over the world. That has an enormous impact on how we understand work, how we work, how we go about it. And it implies that we have become, in organizational levels, much more horizontal, much more culturally aware. So what I've been observing is generally there has been going down in hierarchies, working faster, working more in English, introducing new cultures, and therefore also complexity has increased. So the people I work with, the teams and the leaders I work with, they come to me many times because they want to learn how to deal better with complexity, with a world that is changing so fast that they can't keep up with it. How can they be more resilient? How can they lead in with teams that are completely different to each other and get the best out of them? So this is what I'm observing generally at organizational levels. There has been a big shift and a huge change. At the same time, when I look at the world and I look at politics, it's quite interesting how we're trying to go a little bit backwards. So it's kind of like I have the feeling that there is kind of anxiety and fear of where is the world going? Where are all these changes taking us with all the global challenges that we're facing? And therefore, there is kind of like this very human and very normal, coming up of fear, of anxiety. What is this world going? And therefore, like citizens starting to kind of like slow down, like what is the world, where are we going to, and starting to vote for leaders that are spreading a very simplistic way of a world where there is black and white, good and bad, you know, let's make the world better again, you know, vote for me and I will give you a solution. So I'm here, I'm seeing kind of these two big kind of like energies, where one is going more towards democracy, adaptability, flexibility, fast changing, horizontalization of structures, and on the other hand, politically pushing the other direction. Mm. So, and we are really right now in the world in a moment where these two, I think, two waves are coming together. I think we're all kind of like feeling it. I am in my one-on-one coaching sessions that I'm dealing with in the last 6 months. I feel I hear that worry in leaders. Where are we going? What's happening? So yeah, this is a little bit what I'm seeing. I'm seeing on the one hand a big change, and on the other hand, the resistance to change and the fear towards that change.
Would you say that maybe due to complexity, we wish for more certainty all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So maybe that there's a correlation, but certainty is never there. Certainty is a concept, right? That we just kind of, okay, we think it's certain, but nothing is certain except for one thing, as people say. But would you see the correlation with this wish for certainty?
Absolutely. And this is actually the work I do with leaders. This is the work I do with organizations and with teams, to understand and accept that part of being human, and the fact that it's very difficult for our minds many times to deal with the uncertainty that comes with change. The mind really likes security for a reason. I mean, from an evolutionary perspective, when there is a change, you know, there is like, okay, what's happening? How am I going to survive this? So, so it's very natural. And at the same time, change is the only normal. It's the only thing that is always present. And what I actually help my clients do is to learn to actually recognize, oh, I am panicking, or I'm really getting afraid of this change, but actually learning to accept it and to see, okay, how do I go beyond change? How do I go beyond the fear and the anxiety that is coming out of that change, so that I can lead in a way that I can, you know, inspire others and work with the change, work within the change and in spite of the change.
Do you see that the whole AI transformation topic is adding fuel to this fear and anxiety?
Absolutely. I mean, we all know, we have all experienced what happened with social media, something that was, you know, if you look at it from the distance, you would say this is quite basic. Like, oh, you put some pictures there, you put some messages, like, dislike. How can that be make any dangerous? How can that have a bad impact? Now we're seeing generations of people that are addicted, like new generations that are fighting with mental health because of social media. So now we all know we're coming into a much bigger change, and there are many questions. There are many, you know, uncertainties, and what's going to happen to my job, what's going to happen to the future of work, what's going to happen to the future of my children. And this is adding fuel in a more, I think it's more in a subconscious way. It's like we're all waiting for a big change and it's already happening. And that's what's actually fueling that anxiety. And then we don't know how to deal with it. So yeah, definitely our not knowing of what is AI going to do to human, to Homo sapiens, I think that fuels a lot of the fear and anxiety that we're seeing at the collective level.
That's very interesting, because in my work, from the AI strategy work with executives, I always call for being active and making active decisions on where you want to apply AI, where it is useful, where you want to prioritize human strengths and your team, and where you want to know technology to help you. So very kind of be active and resolute and make these decisions yourself. Otherwise, they will be made for you by whomever. How do you approach that? That maybe not specifically AI topic, but kind of this, what would be your advice, solution, practical things that, you know, people could do to get through this complexity and uncertainty phase.
Some of my clients laugh because they say, Amaya, you always use that one word, you know, which is awareness, consciousness. So, you know, if we look at history and all the changes that Homo sapiens have gone through, you know, like Industrial Revolution and, you know, wars, I'm impressed and appalled by what humans can do, like in the positive and in the negative side. When I look at what has helped us is to actually take a step back, learn to take a step back and say, okay, so why am I doing this? What is this for? Like learning to slow down and to become aware of when I'm in an emotion. So emotions are many times I can get excited or I can get afraid. The problem with emotions is that they're very strong and they don't let us see very clearly. This is why a lot of the work I do with my clients has to do also with learning to slow down, learning to recognize when I, myself, Amaya or Anna, when are emotions very present, and learn to stop and not take decisions from that place. Because we are social animals. We are animals that have evolved for thousands of years to survive. We haven't evolved to build great worlds, or our key essential part of us is survival. And those emotions help us to do that, exactly, survive. The problem is where the context has changed. We're not in the African savannah anymore. So a lot of these anxieties and fears, and they come from a place of, oh my God, I'm going to die. Let me survive. And a lot of the actions come from there. So a lot of the work I do with my clients, actually through the use of tools like meditation, also coaching, reflective questions, is around taking a step back and going beyond those immediate emotions. Learning to not react blindly to these emotions, but try to stop, create a space so that the emotions can calm down, and then consciously ask myself, okay, what do I want to do here? What's important? What values do I want to respect and why? And that's what I work a lot with my clients, is to get to that place of clarity, of calmness, of consciousness and awareness, so that we can take decisions not from a place of fight or flight, but from a place of rational understanding of what's going to help.
So this is now a bit of a kind of the reason why I started the introduction to today's episode with a little breathe in, breathe out. Actually, I am at the moment very inspired by something that you are you have created at the moment, and it's a small meditation series. So I think you can explain it better, but there is a small meditation challenge that you at the moment are offering. It's for free for anyone who wants to try. And I'm on the episode 5. I think I'm lacking a few episodes behind, but I really enjoy it every day. And it definitely does calm the mind down. And it has a very, it's a very nice experience, although you don't really know what it does. I cannot consciously describe what it does, but I noticed that it helps. So it's not a lot of effort. So it's called Unhooked, and I'm making an advertisement for you, but you can explain, and actually but more why you decided to create such a small meditation challenge. And when did you actually discover yourself that this helps within your leadership coaching things?
That's a very, very good question. So as I started, so just very for people who may want to follow this challenge, it's a 28-day challenge where there are daily episodes to meditate around 10-12 minutes. It's called Unhooked, Reclaiming Your Compass to Awareness. And you can just find it in Apple Podcasts or in Podbean. As Anna said, it's for free. So why did I do this? I started coaching leaders in the year around 2012. And, you know, I realized that a lot of the approach we take in coaching and generally in the Western world is very mental. We want to understand the mind, and the mind gives us always problems, and we want to give solutions to the mind. When I realized the importance of emotions and how many times in the current society, we kind of despise or we don't even pay attention to emotions without realizing that a biggest majority of the decisions you take are actually emotional. But it's kind of like we get afraid of, oh my God, like, don't tell me I'm irrational. I started paying attention to, okay, so how am I when I am irrational, when I'm taking decisions that afterwards I'm like, why did I decide this? Or when I get afraid, like many people I coach, they tell me, oh my God, I'm scared of public speaking, or imposter syndrome. This is so extended by CEOs or directors, and they tell you, don't tell anyone. But actually, you know what? I don't know why people are following me. And then it's like, okay, so it's on the one hand, we think ourselves to be very rational, but on the other hand, emotions play a huge role. And sometimes we don't even understand why. That's how I started meditating. And in meditation, what we learn is to actually observe our minds. What happens when I try to just sit still and observe my breath? And by doing that, we start observing, understanding our minds, the powerful, immense power and beauty of our minds. But sometimes understanding that the mind is not the place to go to live life. You know, and to life is not a problem to solve. And many times that's what we try to do. Well, what's the problem? What's the solution? Mm-hmm. That's how the mind thinks. But life is something mysterious. It's something like nobody can create a narrative of what is life. How do you live life? Each person needs to experience that and live in that process of living and understanding and allowing yourself to be yourself. And in that process of learning how to meditate, and especially going into something called non-dual meditation, I started getting the tools for myself first, and afterwards to help my clients to understand, how do I go to that space where I am open, when I'm not afraid, where I can listen to others, where I can listen to myself, and see the world from a place of clarity, as opposed to our day-to-day, where we're filled with emotions, and we see the world through the glasses of this emotion or that emotion, through the glasses of the ego as well. And that's how I came to the fascinating, I think, world of meditation. And I use that a lot with my clients to help them come to a place where decision making, making an analysis of the world, of their decisions, understanding when they are taking decisions from an ego perspective and when they are actually trying to help and really lead people to a better place. And that's how I came to this world, and I use it a lot. So
this is now full circle to maybe as an answer to the how we deal with uncertainty and complexity. Well, obviously, meditate more. I remember, wasn't it also the end of one of Harari's books, of these 21 lessons for 21st century? I think the last chapter was, well, we should all start to meditate.
Harari is another one. Actually, he was the one who inspired me to start this journey in meditation, because he fascinates me when he's talking and the clarity in his mind. And yeah, he will tell you how many stupid thoughts he has. Like, when you meditate, you realize how useless that you have. We have so many thoughts that are completely contradictory, like stupid, ridiculous. So you start kind of like seeing yourself with more compassion. It's like, wow, I'm not that perfect. I'm not that intelligent. And therefore you start seeing the other with also more compassion and understanding, wow, we say, like, our minds say so many stupid things, and it's okay. But like, I need to learn to kind of fish the thoughts that are going to help me and help others. And I think if we go towards a world where we can do that, we can see the AI as a tool that can help the human get to a different level, like help us grow, help us trust each other. I mean, I think trust is another big topic, right? Like, we as humans are so strong because we trust each other. We can see trust everywhere, you know, like we're using right now Wi-Fi that somebody else built for us. We take a plane that somebody else has built. And this is all based on trust. We trust that the engineer that built the plane is trustworthy. So like going into understanding our minds, and when I go into trust, when I go into fear and anxiety, I'm learning to go beyond that. And I think that definitely is, from my perspective, whether you call it meditation, maybe for some people it's art or sports, whatever it is that helps you come to a place of calmness and awareness and consciousness, like where you are able to see clearly, I think that's something that I would definitely recommend.
Yeah. And while you were talking, it just reminds me of you were talking about non-dual meditation, and it is about kind of understanding that body and mind are not one. So there's not two, they're not dual. It's one thing we are, and kind of the trusting the body to do things, kind of not having mind control it. I experience it when I play tennis a lot. So it's one of the main rules to play really well is to be relaxed and not think. And it's very, very interesting. It's so difficult not to think when you have a ball coming and you start feeling insecure, you start thinking how I'm going to take this ball, and you ruin the shot. And if you kind of lean back and just relax and let your body do the things, then the shot gets really good. So I find this so fascinating, like why this is like this. Why do I mess up the shot if I start thinking more? And we can talk about it maybe over another coffee. very philosophical.
Yeah, but this is exactly the point you're touching when you say, where are we trying to get when we're meditating? It's exactly that. It's exactly that point where I am much more open and real. I don't need to mini control everything and come from emotions and fear. You just learn to trust the body. Trust, like use everything. Not that the mind uses you, but you're actually conscious of it all. You can use the mind, but you can trust the body. You can use the body. So that space where I'm not constantly stuck in thinking, that's where we're trying to get. And this is when we train meditation. That's what we're training, to come back to that space. To that space where you playing an amazing serving in tennis, or when you're scoring a goal in the middle of a football, or where you're just in flow with a person that you're having a conversation and you're really present. So it's actually that ability to be very present in the here and now, when I'm not thinking of the future or the past, or I did this mistake and how am I going to, but you're able to be fully in the here and now. The more we can do that, I think the more we're able to give the best of ourselves and go into a world where we can actually use AI, for AI to help us and put limitations and, you know, look at how we can benefit from it, as opposed to the other, where AI ends up using us because we're not aware, the same way that the mind many times ends up using us.
Conscious use. It sounds like something, we're coming to the end of our talk, as something of a piece of advice looking towards the future, but I'm not going to put this into your mouth. So how do you look into the future in our AI-driven, technology-driven world?
So what I want to remind us all is that we are deciding. It's us all. Like AI is nothing that came from I don't know where. It's not a hurricane. We constructed AI. So it's that reminder of taking a step back and you know, it's not somebody else. We collectively choose our present. So I don't know how the future will be, but I know that we as humans have the capacity to take that step back. We did it after the Second World War. We have seen situations like after the Industrial Revolution and seeing how people ended up working 14 hours, 16 hours. We were able to take a step back, to put limitations. We were able to say, hey, after the Second World War, what are we doing? Why are we killing ourselves? So the human has the capacity to take that step back and to look really with honesty inside. Say, so what can I do? How can I contribute to this world? Regardless of whether you are the CEO, whether you are, you know, selling croissant in a boulangerie, doesn't matter. We all have a little choice. We all change the world every day. You know, we are changing the world constantly. So it's your choice. How am I going to change the world today? Am I deciding to be honest? Am I deciding to be authentic? Am I deciding to spread hate or spread love? It's individual choices that we exercise every single day, in every single moment. We can also learn to forgive ourselves when we go into dark places and we don't give the best of ourselves. It's okay, we're human. But I think if we learn to, the future is not written in stone, the future is not a given, we make the future today. So today will determine how well tomorrow will be. So I would like to leave maybe this podcast with that idea that don't think that it's somebody else constructing the future. We construct the future with each and every action or inaction that we take right now.
Nothing to add on my end. Thank you very much, Amaya, for being such a delightful guest and sharing all your wisdom and experience. And moreover, inspiring us to be and do better. Für alle euch da draußen, eine Empfehlung noch einmal, wirklich in die Meditation Unhooked einzuschalten. Ich werde auch den Link in die Notes dazu geben. Und nächste Woche machen wir eine kleine Pause, aber übernächste Woche habe ich wieder einen wunderbaren Gast. Er ist Vorstand einer großen österreichischen Bank und hat wirklich viel zu erzählen. Freut euch drauf. Bis bald im AIML Lounge und ja, bleibt fröhlich, trotz der manchmal herrschenden Weltuntergangsstimmung. Alles Liebe. Tschüss.
Tschüss.